Good afternoon. My name is Sjoerd Duyker. I am the soil management specialist at Penn State and Department of Plant Science. And I'm going to tell you about our work with cover crop mixtures after corn silage for the northeastern United States. And my presentation is together with my colleagues, Ron Huber, our on-farm research coordinator, Charlie White, who is a research associate with us, and then Dean Hively, who is a research scientist with USGS, who helped me with some remote sensing data that we have used to monitor the adoption of cover crops. So cover crops, why? I think most people know the benefits compared to having a bare soil. Erosion control, there is a water management benefits. Water either excess can be reduced in when the cover crop is growing, or when the cover crop is a dead mulch, it conserves moisture for the following crop. There is the nutrient retention and recycling benefits of cover crops. Soil compaction reduction, we have shown the roots really to be very important. Massive root system gives you soil reduction in soil bulk density. Weed control benefits and potential also for providing occasionally feed for our animals. You know, Pennsylvania is a big dairy state, so the cover crops can also be used to feed the dairy cows. We started a project called Without Carrot or Stick, a curious name, but we wanted to help. This is really a demonstration, more a demonstration research project. We wanted to help the farmers adopt cover crops without really using a carrot in the terms of a subsidy, or a stick in terms of coming after them with the police to tell them, if you don't plant cover crop, you are going to get in trouble. We wanted to help them adopt cover crops voluntarily through our education and demonstration project. We use the extension system. In our project, we over 3 years, every year, we work with 10 small to medium-sized dairy farms in the Chesapeake Bay watershed in Pennsylvania, and we focused on the corn silage ground because we saw that was the number one priority to get cover crops there. First, there the bare soil. There we have no crop residue at all after corn silage harvest, only a few pricks sticking up, and so there's a lot of potential for erosion, and also there is almost always manure being applied because these are dairy farmers who harvest the corn silage, and there's a lot of potential for nutrient loss as well. So the cover crop can really serve a great purpose, and there is the benefit that due to the early harvest, we can really get these cover crops established in time. So we have a larger window for cover crops. we wanted to evaluate mixtures of cover crops, and we also wanted to get some good research data, so we did a replicated plots at each site, 4 replications of small plots. But then we also wanted to get the really farmer engagement, so we had we gave the farmer the opportunity to select some cover crop that they had not been using yet, that they would like to test on up to 10 acres, and we would then pay for the seed. Just to help them do something out of the box that they would or otherwise not do. So we were really keen on having the active involvement of the farmer, because then also we had field days at the site, and the farmer would have to be there, and the farmer was very important to have the farmer on board to be a very active proponent of these cover crops. So the selection of the farmers was very important. It was done by our extension agent. They have really to be given credit for that. And we were very bit ambitious, and we told NRCS, who funded this project, we are going to measure the impact of our project. It was only a 3-year project, and normally soil management practices, to have farmers adopt soil management practices on a big scale takes a long time. But anyway, we said we're going to give it a shot. So we measured the increase in cover crops adoption from the year before our project to the current year, to this year, 2013. Why cover crop mixtures? Well, we wanted to select species that could complement each other. For example, species that could give control of erosion in the fall and in the winter. Both, of course, some cover crops do that already, but some cover crops die over the winter, and so they would not provide a lot of erosion control. So you want to mix it with something else that is alive in the spring. There's the nutrient uptake issue. When we have a live cover crop, it takes up nutrients from the soil, but some of our cover crops, like this radish that we see here on this picture, it will die in about the early January, and then there could be a potential already for nutrient release, and it doesn't, of course, take up any nutrients from that point on. So you like to mix something like that with another cover crop that is alive in the spring. We were looking for mixtures of cover crops that have different types of root architecture, tap roots versus fine roots. And then also very important for us was to look at the feed production potential of the cover crops. Some cover crops grow faster in the fall versus others grow faster in the spring. A typical example being oats. Oats grows fast after corn silage if you get it in on time, and it can produce more biomass in the fall than something like rye that has to go through fertilization. So we wanted to look at that. This is just an example of the geographic spread of our sites in Pennsylvania. So you see here, we went from the very north here, where this is fairly high altitude and a short growing season for corn silage. Even there is not a lot of corn grain produced here. And we go all the way to the south. And we didn't have the same sites every year, but this gives you an idea of the spread. So there's a big difference in the growing conditions here versus here. Here there's a lot longer season, and so there's more opportunity for getting those cover crops to put on some growth and compared to over here. These were the types of mixes that we looked at. We have crimson clover and annual ryegrass triticale, cereal rye and oats, rape, hairy vetch and rye, tillage radish, hairy vetch and rye, tillage radish and cereal rye. That was the first year. We didn't use the same mixtures every year. You see, we used less rye in the second year because the rye was really dominant in our mixtures in the spring. We said we know rye works, so we don't want to just keep on looking at the same thing all the time. We wanted to look at some different types of cover crops. So we used actually more crimson clover. You see the legume that is more prevalent in the second year and the third year is crimson clover, because crimson clover, we originally thought it was not going to be winter hardy in our state, but actually over the years we have experienced very good survival. So it has become a very popular cover crop for our farmers because of its properties with high protein content. And then we mix those with some different things, annual ryegrass, crimson clover, with triticale oats. We had annual ryegrass with forage oats. So, for example, here the oats would winter kill, but the annual ryegrass would be there in the spring was the idea. And you can see the types of mixtures we had. You also see I put the variety name there, and we have also experienced that we need to know the variety of the cover crop. There's a lot of differences in the winter hardiness of the cover crops depending on the variety that you choose. So we also got the varieties from the seed company. These are the results of the biomass. We measured biomass in our small plots. These are the different years. I present here to you rated from the lowest average to the highest average for all the 10 sites. And then I present here to you the minimum biomass and the maximum biomass. This is the average for the four applications for one particular location. So you see, we had biomass from 3,000 kilograms per hectare to up to 5,000 kilograms per hectare. This is in the spring. Perhaps you remember from the previous presentation, she had 1,800 kilograms per hectare. So these yields are very good. We have very good cover crop growth. And this is at the time of corn, just before the farmer would plant corn. In the second year, we had, this is the average again, from 3,000 to 5,500, and from 1,500 to 4,500 there. But you also see there was a huge range, depending on the location primarily. If we are far in the north, our biomass production will be a lot less than if we are in the further southern sites. But sometimes there was also a big difference between sites that were very close together, depending on manure history of the site. If there is more manure applied over the years, that cover crop has a lot greater potential. This is the... clicked the wrong button. Let me see here. Okay, this is the nitrogen. So this is the nitrogen in the above ground biomass. And so you can see it went here. It was on average up to 100 pounds or 100 kilograms per hectare. But at some sites, it was up to 200. In these years, also, we had very high nitrogen content in the crimson and triticale, the mixtures with crimson clover. Of course, this is not all nitrogen taken up from the soil. It is also nitrogen that is fixed from the atmosphere. But high nitrogen content and ability to use that in the for the next crop, or the farmers can harvest it also, and it is a very good forage value. So just a little bit about our outreach activities. We did a lot of 55 cover crop walks. We had more than 1,100 participants. We did a lot of indoor presentations and articles in newsletters and interviews and articles in trade journals. And then we measured the impact, and this was Dean Hively really who did this. He used remote sensing. We used Landsat images and spot images. He measured the, he took a picture of a certain area where there was a concentration of farmland. We couldn't take the whole state, but we looked at where there was an area where of four counties. He measured the cover crop, the greenness of the land in on these dates, in early March or February. It was, he selected those dates based on the availability of images, but they happen to be about the same growing degree days for rye production. So here you see this is what the Landsat image was, and this was the spot image. He, in this last year, he wasn't able to get a good Landsat image. There was too much cloudiness. And these are the some of our most prominent ag counties. This yellow is the corn ground. So he selected the corn ground and then looked at the greenness of that corn ground in the spring. And these are the data for the different counties. I just want to point out there's a lot of data, but this brown bar is the bare fallow, the fallow that the corn ground that did not have a cover crop. So if you look at this brown one, you see over 4 years only, we see a very significant drop. It went actually from about, I think on average 60, it dropped about 25%. So we believe that this shows us that we had a 25% increase in cover crop adoption, which is very significant. So we were very happy about that. So in conclusion, our project without carrot or stick, we feel it is a successful method of mixing research and learning with demonstration. We combined small plot work with farmer demonstrations and achieved innovation and impact. We used a lot of different outreach methods, and we recorded very significant cover crop biomass growth in our project and very significant nitrogen content in the above ground biomass. The result of our project has been an increase in the area that we took a study, 35% cover crop to 63% cover crop at the end of our project. Not all due to our effort, but due to the combined effort of a lot of different people, because we are not the only ones who work on cover crop, but we see a big increase in cover crop adoption in our state. Thank you very much.
Thank you. No questions?